Hello, this is Neil Ruda. Welcome to Unsung Missionary Heroes, interviews with heroes of the faith. This podcast is brought to you by the 9 international ministries of Assemblies of God World Missions. These ministries are Builders International, Compassion Link, Global Initiative, Global University, Jacob's Hope, Life Publishers, Network 21-1, Oral Learners Initiative, and Royal Rangers International. For more information, visit im-agwm.org. Now let's join our podcast. Today I'm here with Mark Barcliffe, longtime missionary serving with Global University, and it's a privilege to interview him. Mark, thank you for taking the time to do this. Mark travels extensively, and so getting a time to sit with him has been a challenge, and I'm just grateful for the opportunity. Thank you so much for that. So I want to begin by asking the question that I like to ask all of my guests, and that is, how did you become a Christian?
Yeah, that was a long time ago, Neil. I actually became a believer my first year in university, was attending what arguably is the most progressive university or college in America.
Okay.
And was then and still is today. It's in Olympia, Washington, if anyone is curious. There had been a local revival, youth revival, among kids in my high school and others in town related to a visit by Barry McGuire to an AG church in the city. My friends had been impacted by that. I had been curious about it, but kept it pretty much at arm's length. Yeah. But during that time period, I'd had a clear witness of the gospel. I'd come to, I suppose, believe intellectually, but not committed to heart. So it was actually on a Sunday afternoon. I was just utterly bored, living off campus and nothing to do on a Sunday. And I remember there was this church across town that sometimes had good music. And I thought, well, maybe something's going on there. And so I thought, well, I'll go there tonight. And I had no idea what time church service would start Sunday night. I showed up about 8 o'clock. And they were just at the end of the service. Yeah. And I actually, it wasn't the first time I had visited there. I watched as an altar call was given and some young people went forward. And I thought, that's great. They're getting their lives together. Never dawning on me that needed to be me. Yeah. And then what happened in the foyer after the service, I saw more and more young people that had come to faith in the Lord and thought, this is just incredible, the power of God to change lives. Because I knew these kids. I had done things with these kids that I don't want to talk about now. One young lady actually from across the foyer, she looked up and she said, praise the Lord, Mark, are you a Christian? And that was God's moment for me.
Yeah.
And I didn't close my eyes, but internally I prayed, God, if you'll still have me, I'm yours. Put up my hand and said, yes. And she said, praise the Lord. So I was discipled by a dear brother who passed away this last year, a pastor. And that led from there to sharing the Lord with everybody I knew. I just started tracking down people. I was the first in my immediate family to serve the Lord. I started reaching out to old friends and old girlfriends. The lead on that list was Renee. I reached out to Renee. She thought it was crazy, but she still liked me. And so she was willing to listen. She was, it worked out, that would have been in early November. I invited her to come to a watch night service. Okay. She lived up in Seattle. I was down in Olympia, we're about 50 miles away. So I went up to pick her up, driving back on Interstate 5. And she says, Mark, I just want you to know, I like you, but I don't believe this stuff. Don't expect anything to happen. And so we got to the service. The Lord was moving. And there came a time for an altar call. And I wish she could tell the story herself, but she would tell you that during the altar call, she looked up and her hand was up, that she didn't raise it, but there it was. And same thing when people were asked to go forward, she has no memory of going out into the aisle, but she just found herself in the aisle and then came down. And so for both of us, it was quite dramatic, quite instantaneous. And everything changed.
Was this in an AG church?
This was in an AG church. So this would have been in Olympia, what's now called Evergreen Christian Community, then Evergreen Christian Center. At that time, Glenn Cole was pastoring there.
And this would have been 70s?
This would have been the 70s.
Okay, Jesus People days. That was my era.
So the underlying influence was the Jesus movement.
Yeah.
And I've reflected on that over the years. I don't think that's been documented sufficiently, the impact that that has. There are many AGWM personnel of our age that were first impacted by that move of God, serving the Lord today.
So how did you meet?
We had actually met in high school. She attended, as I said, she was from Seattle, so about 50 miles away.
50 or 15?
50. 50
miles. Okay.
There were three high schools in Western Washington that got together one weekend for a leadership conference.
Okay.
And it was just an accidental thing that I went. She was there. We connected. I noticed this crazy redheaded girl, and for some reason she noticed me. Subsequent to that weekend, then we started getting together, and her boyfriend and girlfriend for some time, and then for a while not. And then after we both came to the Lord, tried to kind of play it cool for a while, but within a couple of years we were married and moving ahead and serving the Lord.
So how were you called to missions?
Well, the call to missions is, I think both of us from our very earliest Christian experience just were in churches that had a very strong emphasis on missions. The church I was a part of had a missions convention within a week or so after my conversion.
Oh, wow.
So I never knew any better.
Yeah.
I didn't know they were AG, but I knew they were missions.
Yeah.
And so that just became part of my blood, and Renee as well. Mm-hmm. So over the years of preparation and call to some kind of ministry, we both spent together and individually time at the altar. Mm-hmm. You know, God, here am I. Send me whatever you want. I'm willing to do it. And I remember services with well-known names in the AG of in missions, pouring our hearts out to God. And there came a time when it was clear that wasn't what God was calling us to do at the time.
Yeah.
And I had an extremely clear call to Pioneer Church.
Okay.
It was the clearest leading of the Lord in my life to this day.
Mm-hmm.
So we pioneered a church in the Northwest. We're happily doing that. We were about 6 years into that experience. We had bought property. We'd purchased a building. We're moving ahead with the church and become a sovereign church. And we'd built a home. We'd had two children during that time. And I had just an odd experience. I was on an airplane. I had traveled East Coast for some purpose and was flying back and reading a travel, remember the old travel magazines?
Sure.
Reading a travel magazine, and it was about Colombia. I think it was an article about Cartagena. Just reading that, it wasn't about what it said, but the Lord spoke to me sitting in that. I think I had a window seat. I never do window seats anymore, but I did then. Said, it's not over. And I knew immediately what that meant. And then my mind and my heart started flooding with images and ideas about world missions.
Mm-hmm.
Just the concept that almost everywhere in America, you can get to a church by walking.
Yeah.
And you compare that globally with the need, and that just overwhelmed me. And so that call was almost instantaneous for me. But it's so scary because we were so comfortable.
Yeah.
I had to go back and tell Renee.
Yeah.
Our congregation had entered into a period of internal revival.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, lots of people coming in, but people being renewed and so on. And so we had some extended prayer times after the service. And during one of those extended prayer times, Renee came up to me and she said, "I'm not saying yes, but I'm willing." Now, I had to shut up because I had been talking so much about what God was dealing with me about. And later she explained it while she was praying. It's so powerful. The Lord spoke to her with a question. And the question was, what is your life for? And the response that came back was in the negative. That is to say, it's not for having a beautiful home with family around.
Yeah.
It's not for raising my kids in a great community. It's not for one of the things that came to mind as she was responding to the Lord. It's not for watching Seahawks football games every week, which is a big thing, still is. And that just led her to a state of willingness.
Yeah.
And in that state of willingness, then God spoke and we began the process of seeking candidate status.
Where did you first serve?
We first served in the Canary Islands.
Okay.
The call was very clear to both of us that we would be involved in training of some kind, mm-hmm. and it's been that way throughout, pretty much. We knew nothing of the Canary Islands other than the fact that when we were in seminary, we had known a man who was killed in that, still the worst airline tragedy in history that happened in the Canaries.
It was two planes on the runway.
Two 747s. Yeah. One, it was foggy, and one was given, they had both refueled, and one was given clearance to take off, but it wasn't, the other was not where they thought it was.
Yeah.
And so by the time the one pilot saw the other plane, it was too late. That had its own role, the growth of the church in the Canary Islands. But that had happened. That was back in the, I think that happened in 78.
How long did you serve there?
So we were there just short of two terms.
Okay.
Of course, we spent a year in Costa Rica for language school. The previous language school. As is the experience of others, sometimes with language study, we got to the Canaries and realized this isn't the Spanish we learned. But we were able to learn it. And I have to say that becoming fluent in a second language as an adult is one of the greatest experiences of my life. I just love that. To this day, when I run into Spanish speakers, when I'm traveling, even if they're in an airport in Saigon, I love being able to shock them by talking with them in their language.
So you keep up the language.
Well, we've been gone for a long time. Yeah. I've taught in Cuba a few times, have occasion to use it, but I don't have the fluency or vocabulary, obviously, that I had at one point.
So tell me about your life and career in missions.
That's a big question.
Yes.
I'd have to say, with all the challenges, I've loved everything about it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't regret anything. There's a few things I might have done differently over the years, but I feel so privileged. And sometimes, even to this day, I can't believe that I can do this as a career. Yeah. I get to do this for a living.
Yeah.
And I love that. So Canary Islands was significant because we had to learn another culture. We had to experience a very different situation. Canary Islands is Spain politically, but it's culturally there are a lot of differences, and so we had to accommodate to that. It's rather isolated, insular, and being in that situation was an experience that I value because it was different than other experiences I've had in my life. We were close enough to breathe the dust of the Sahara Desert off the coast of Morocco and Southern Sahara. So it's a bit isolated. If you're in the Canary Islands, nobody stops to see you on their way somewhere else. I went through that. These are all pre-internet days. And so we got to experience that. Had a very formative experience when we came back for our first time of itineration. That was when I got back. My father bought me a new computer. That would have been in 92.
The old DOS days.
Yeah, yes, sir. It had a thing called a modem.
Yes.
And I thought, wow.
And bulletin board services.
There was a thing called the internet. So first I experimented with the modem, and I connected to, I had sent Renee over to my dad's house and connected, Amber text.
Yeah.
And so I connected over the modem, and then I typed, and Renee's over there, she types hello, and I type, who is this? It was just so weird back then. Renee being Renee, who do you think it is? And because of that, then I subscribed to a very early internet service, which, this is pre-World Wide Web. There's no graphical interface whatsoever. But I connected to a couple of, through the nodes that were available, I was able to connect to the University of Las Palmas, which was two blocks from the home we'd had in the Canaries.
Oh.
And then connected with one of the islands in the Canaries has several world-class telescopes because of the clarity of the air and the atmosphere, and was able to connect to public information there. It just blew me away.
Those were exciting days.
5,000 miles away, and I'm looking at content.
Yes.
It did not lead me to invest, and it did not lead me to change my missions career at the time, but I had a very clear thought, this is going to change the world.
Yeah.
Now, millions of people had that same thought, obviously, at that time period. But I began to pay attention. So I kept that service. I had to do dial-up to Madrid or Barcelona from the Canary Islands So I couldn't connect very much. Yeah, very expensive. But I wanted to pay attention to what was happening.
Yeah.
Of course, just within a couple of years, you had the graphic interface and World Wide Web, and things began to change. And I started thinking there has to be a way to exploit these new technologies for missions. Mm-hmm. During that time began discussions with George Flattery mm-hmm. about coming to work with ICI.
How did you connect with George?
That's a really good question. I don't know that I remember. Okay. Exactly. Somebody connected us.
Okay.
And then at some point I flew to Dallas, had the biggest culture shock of my life after living in Spain. But then talked it over and he invited me to come work with ICI. Mm-hmm. And so it took a little while and I really felt that was God's direction for us and our family. Shortly after getting settled in, George called me into his office. He said, "Mark, I'd like you to think about going back to school and doing another doctorate." That was an amazing challenge because I wanted to be able to pursue a different my PhD is in biblical exposition, so okay. I had that area covered, but was very interested in technology. Yeah. Began looking at different programs, found a leading program in doctor of education in instructional technology and wow. distance education.
Yeah.
So the fit with ICI and what's now global was ideal.
Yeah.
A 3-year program, you had to be in the field, working in the field. So that fit really well.
Yeah.
It was great to be in a secular school, rubbing shoulders with mostly secular people, have that experience at that point in my life. So got into that program. As I completed that began to open doors. Of course, mm-hmm. the merger leading to Global yeah. University happened at about the same time. And so that overlapped and that just opened doors for ministry here at Global. Ended up running the technology divisions here. And that led me to really what been kind of the focus of my personal focus from that time on, which are limited access, restricted access okay. countries, what here we call sensitive mm-hmm. countries, specifically the use of technology to meet needs there. And that's gone from some very simple projects that we've done to some rather more complex and large scale projects. But that began very, very simple with some very simple things we did.
Are you at liberty to talk about them?
I'm not sure. I need to be careful because mm-hmm. I'm not the one that decides. We serve the regions.
Yeah.
So one of the regions that may be obvious to our listeners with particular challenges, we at one time had school with 30, online school, 30,000 students because of changes both in law and technology, and we had to shut that down.
Close
that
it.
Was a huge tragedy. Others, we've been able to serve in places like Vietnam, started mm-hmm. out. When I started working with Vietnam, it was quite sensitive,
mm-hmm.
less so now. When I started working with Vietnam, the Assemblies of God was entirely underground and now
okay.
is a registered denomination legally operating in the country. And so we've done a number of projects with online schools, probably in excess of, with all of them combined, probably in excess of 25 different online schools over the years
okay.
that we've developed for different partners, as well as just developing strategies that may not always be technology, but to help develop training systems
mm-hmm.
for different partners that we work with.
What delivery do you use? When you say online, we're talking, they're coming to us via the internet or Kindles or?
Right. So GU uses a lot of different strategies.
Okay.
When I say online, I'm speaking specifically learning management systems.
Okay.
So some of them are open enrollment.
Mm-hmm.
So if you know where to go, you can go and enroll
and
become a student. Others are you need to have somebody let you in.
Yes.
So those vary by the need and the language. Some, the scale is so big that we don't have people that can serve as administrators, so we just open it wide. Others are fairly limited in the number of people that they serve. But over the years, I'd have to say many, certainly conservatively speaking, many, many tens of thousands
wow.
that have studied online through those systems.
Okay. What are some of the highlights that
well,
you've seen?
Yeah, yeah. I guess just the highlights don't relate to the technology, but
mm-hmm.
they relate to changed lives from people coming into contact with Global University material.
Yeah.
And so there's so many. I was at a graduation this past year in India. And I mean, this is bragging a little bit, but India College of Ministry.
Right.
We developed in conjunction with Indian AG National Churches. That has now grown to over, I think we've passed 50,000 students now. I can't talk a lot about the purpose, but it's been very effective in that purpose. And so at this particular graduation, one of the ladies, one of the students testifying about the impact, she was a lawyer. And she said, these books are better than anything I ever studied in my academic studies.
Wow.
And I thought, I'll take that.
Yeah.
I know that one story is just, it's kind of heartbreaking, but it's so impressive. I'll keep it somewhat general, but they're a people group that we serve with their own language in Southeast Asia. And there was a graduation for that. And a gentleman showed up to graduate. He'd completed all 18 courses. He had gone quite some distance on his motorbike to get to this graduation. Very tiring trip and worn out. And so goes to the graduation, and some of the leaders working with him and said, you want to stay a few days and rest and stuff. And he said, no, I have to get back. My wife passed away a couple of days ago, and I have to get back, and we have to do the funeral. And they're like, wow, you came here for this graduation?
Yes. Yeah.
And he said, yeah, she wanted me to. Oh. And they had both been students, and had their lives had changed so much, been impacted by it. And so he had gone all this distance, leaving his wife's body behind. Obviously, someone was taking
what
care, but that you hear that, and it's so humbling. We have a ministry we work with in Athens, and they serve Afghan and Iranian refugees. So they have a program using the same curriculum, but in Farsi primarily. They're telling me the story about a woman that tried to enroll for 3 years in a row. They have a closed enrollment because there are too many wanting to get in. You have to be a leader in some church fellowship. You have to be a Christian for so long. You have to all these qualifications just to get into their program, and then it still fills. And 3 years in a row, she had tried to get in, but was always too late and didn't get in. And she'd gone back to kind of beg to get into it. And they asked her, why is this so important to you? Why do you keep wanting to get in the program? And she said, my husband went through this program, and I saw how it changed his life, and I want that for me.
Wow.
And so those are the highlights.
Yes, indeed.
The highlights, I mean, I've had personally lots of cool experiences and connection, you know. The other type of highlight would be just the personal relationships with individuals around the world and leaders and just regular people serving God in their place.
Brag on global a little bit. How many countries, how many languages? What's the impact of this ministry around the world?
Well, we don't know.
Yeah.
We try to know, and I do some of that research myself. So every year we do, it's an internal report. It's not really a public thing, but we try to determine how many lives have been impacted over the past year. I'm trying to remember what it was this year. We're looking at somewhere north of 3.5 million that people who have either formally enrolled or informally studied with us have downloaded courses, things. There's many ways I go through all these categories, assign a confidence level, come up with conservative numbers, and that leads to that 3.5 million number. So that's the big impact. Bragging on global is, I would say, one of the greatest things about global is languages. So we know we have content in excess of 130, 135 languages. Everything from, we have graduate degrees in two languages and kind of working on down graduate at the top levels, the least number of languages. We have a growing number of undergraduate programs represented by various languages. Right now, One of our focuses is on the Kazakh language and working on a project called Central Asia Theological Institute, which will serve hopefully most of Central Asia, but the physical focus right now is Kazakhstan. It will be two languages, Russian and Kazakh, at the undergraduate level, but then at the discipleship level, evangelism discipleship level, we've got four languages we're focused on. So that would be Russian, Kazakh, Uzbek, and another language I'm not sure I'm at liberty to mention.
How about Global Reach? That's a program that Global University has had for a number of years. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. Global Reach, globalreach.org, it's a website that originally was developed sort of as a proof of concept. So even before the merger, the idea, this is going back to 98 probably. The first glimmers of Global Reach began in 97. I think the URL was acquired in 97 and very foresightful, the name Global Reach. So originally the proof of concept was, can we deliver GU content in multiple languages and multiple media, and did that. And so the first one had some Chinese video and Chinese audio. It had some Spanish material and English and a few different things. So that worked and people used it, although it wasn't user-friendly at all.
But it was cutting edge.
It was cutting edge at the time. In fact, Neil, I cannot verify this, but talking with the people who were very, very early involved in ICI, it is possible that the first gospel presentation on the internet was done by ICI.
Wow.
It's possible. I can't verify it, but I've talked with some of the earliest, the people that were involved in the first efforts, and it's so early that if it wasn't the earliest, it was among the earliest.
Wow.
So Global Reach then, post-merger, we said, we can do this better. There are two things that happened at the same time. One was we thought we can do this a lot better. The other was, and I was working with, he's since passed away, but missionary Joe Jones.
Yes.
And at the time, he was the vice president of what was then called Center for Evangelism and Discipleship. We were moaning over the fact that it was so difficult to get this material out. And we had gotten a report of an entire container at a port in Africa that I don't remember the details, but it sat on the docks for over a year because of bureaucratic issues, and they couldn't get it out. It was full of Global University evangelism discipleship material. One day, Joe and I were talking over this, and it lost in the midst of aging memories, but one of us said, why don't we just give it away? So we did. And that led to the idea of a more systematic approach to the website, globalreach.org. Mm-hmm. We initially tried to launch with five languages. We were able to launch with four. The five that we originally wanted to launch with were English, Spanish, French, the what we call our international office languages, and then Chinese and Arabic.
Okay.
We failed to launch with Arabic, but we launched with those four. And with all 18 Christian life courses, all 18 Christian service courses, and some of our evangelism courses in PDF format, downloadable, as well as to the extent that we had them, MP3 format, and I think we'd use .mov back then for video. The response was huge. I'll never forget, I still have it somewhere, an email I got from the People's Republic of China embassy in, I think, Singapore. You can tell by the URL that it's authentic. The guy didn't identify what his role was or anything, but he was using that email, basically said, this is great stuff. Can you put more up in English and Chinese? That was just amazing to see that. I knew we were connecting with people. That's developed over the years. Now I think we have 40 languages on there. Fred Kovach, missionary for Fred Kovach. Yeah. That is just his heart and his heartbeat.
His passion.
And his passion. He has worked so hard on that and continues to every day. And now we're looking at redeveloping the site entirely to make it from, currently it's a distribution center.
Okay.
So you go there, you get what you want. We don't know anything about you.
Mm-hmm.
So what we want to do is convert, the concept is to convert that into a relationship builder. You come there, you learn more about Global, you learn more about what we offer, if we're going to give you something, mm-hmm. we'd like something.
Yeah.
That something may be an email address.
Mm-hmm.
It may be, in certain cases, it may be a financial exchange.
Mm-hmm.
Or it may be you have the opportunity. Let's say, for example, let's say you start out looking at the CL course, The Life of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
But you have some college behind you, or maybe you're a college graduate. Maybe you're more interested in Life of Christ or Synoptic Gospels, yeah. undergrad course.
Undergrad, yeah.
Or maybe you're interested in a graduate program. So the idea is, based on the language and the people group that language serves, security concerns, there are yeah. all kinds of factors that will be weighed in here. What we might ask of the visitor before they get something from us.
But
the whole concept is how do we change this into a building a relationship yeah. rather than just giving away a static document?
Yeah.
And naturally, we'd rather someone take an interactive online course than simply download
a PDF.
Now, I'll tell you one reason why. Once a PDF is released, we have no idea what happens to
yeah.
it. And we sometimes learn. We know, for example, in country I'm not going to mention, we know of cases where a single document was printed 10,000 times.
Mm-hmm.
We know of, in this country, and I can talk openly about this, I have mixed feelings about it. There are multiple schools, online schools, in the U.S. offering up to a PhD. Yes, I said it correctly. Offering up to a PhD using Global University
material,
discipleship materials. Now, I would love to meet the guy behind this, because obviously he's an entrepreneur. We found other instances where our material was being sold in platforms for selling digital content. We've been able to shut those down. It's more difficult to shut down a school where everything's behind it. You can't really see what's there.
Yeah.
We know as well, I'd just say it without identifying country. There's a country where the Assemblies of God of that country has a publishing house, and they publish our material. It's in their catalog. Go online and look at it, and they sell it, and they have no agreement with us to do that.
Bless them.
Bless them. Yes, and we do. We have.
Mark, were there low points, or did you ever want to give up?
That's a great question. I never wanted to give up.
Good.
That's easy. Were there low points? Of course.
What got you through?
Well, I'm not in this because I decided to be in this. I have a very strong sense of call.
Okay.
Over the years, that's led me to sort of develop a theology of call. And I'd have to say that's in some ways, that's, I want to say, the primary motivator for me, but the thing that keeps me from considering alternatives. You know, I think all of us have opportunities that come up and mm-hmm. people checking, would you be interested in this or that? And some interesting offers that way. But when you know you're doing what God has called you to do, it's not that difficult to say, no, I'm good. Thanks.
Okay.
I appreciate it, but no thanks. Low points? Yeah, we've had some challenging things over the years. Some of them are family related and mm-hmm. probably wouldn't want to get into
sure.
them. I would just say for, you know, if there are families listening, missionary families, I'm really thankful for AGWM and their support for families and concern. Because obviously, any missionary or missionary couple, if you're not supporting the family, they're not going to survive.
Yeah.
My observation of that aspect of AGWM, that they've pretty mostly gotten that right over the years.
Mark, if you could offer a couple tips to new missionaries, what would you say?
That's good. Well, an observation that I made years ago, and I'm not the only one, that remains true, is if you can't live with ambiguity, you may not survive as a missionary. That's not a tip. That's an observation.
Yeah.
If you need everything to be black and white, if you need everything to be in a box, you're gonna have struggles.
Yeah.
So I would, you know, if I translate that into a tip, I'd say let go of that. Let go of that.
Good way.
You may arrive on a field with certain expectations, and it's entirely different than you thought.
Yeah.
You may start out with a certain goal or direction in your own ministry. The Lord may have something else in mind, and He just decided not to tell you before.
Yeah.
because you weren't ready. The other thing is to not give up. I mean, my personal mantra is I don't give up.
Yeah.
So whatever you face, you can just keep going, find a way to keep going. And the Lord will be there. You know, obviously, I don't want to sound sappy, but if it's, you know, the whole thing has to be built on the personal relationship with the Lord. Yeah. You've got to know who you are in Christ. Your relationship with the Father is essential.
Yeah.
That comes first.
Yeah.
That comes before AGWM.
Yeah. It's so easy to get busy in the work.
Yeah. That comes before your assignment. It comes before your field.
Mm-hmm.
It comes before your donors. That relationship has to be number one. And I don't mean certain disciplines. That's how you build and maintain that relationship. But I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the relationship itself. Knowledge of who you are in the Lord, that's essential.
Speaking of knowledge, what can Global University offer missionaries?
You know, one obvious thing is whatever level of academic background that you might want to achieve. We have programs up through a Doctor of Ministry program. I don't know the details, but there's ways for that to be funded through your account and so on, and that's all good.
And the website?
I'm sorry?
And the website for them to find out more information?
Well, globaluniversity.edu.
Okay.
And there's a phone number there that they can call and talk with someone about the program they're interested in. I'd be happy to talk with anybody if they want to connect with me personally. So the other thing that, you know, we talked about the impact that GU has every year around the world. So if you're looking at a strategy for the field that you're called mm-hmm. to or that you're ministering in, think about Global University. The impact we've had is not by accident. We have clear strategies, and we work to contextualize those in the best way possible based on, you know, field, area, region, language, people group. I can say this without fear of contradiction. Global University material in many cases around the world is the only training available mm-hmm. in that language to train leaders for gospel ministry, period. You asked about highlights, and I'll mm-hmm. just share one more that just blew me away. We developed a program in the Hmong language. Hmong people are found in China, Vietnam, mm-hmm. Laos primarily, as well as the U.S. because of issues at the end of the war. I was part of a team that we delivered a box full of Hmong Christian life study guides, but Christian life is the only training many ministers around the world ever get. In the U.S., we think of it as kind of basic discipleship, but it's more than that for millions of people. And we delivered, this is the first delivery of actually printed study guides in the Hmong language. We were way up in the mountains. I was on the back of a motorbike going over this narrow bridge over this gorge way down below and praying for my driver. And we got there and had an outdoor meal. And then we went into this very rudimentary worship center, mm-hmm. we call it that. And up at the front, the altar area, we took the books up there and kind of prayed over them and all that. And then we're just having a conversation. So you had a pastor, a lead pastor, who was responsible for more than 3,000 believers in two or three churches.
Wow.
And he had not had a single day of formal training. And then one of his associate pastors who was responsible for another large congregation mm-hmm. that's part of the group I mentioned. We were kind of standing, talking, and the associate pastor, I noticed when we were by the books, he'd taken one out and he was just looking at it and was so consumed with it. The first time he'd seen, this was the first training material, Christian training material, Christian material, period, that we know of in the Hmong language
that he'd seen
in that country. Not that he'd seen, that anyone had seen.
Wow.
So we're, you know, we'd finished there, we're standing over on the side talking, and I know he twice sort of shuffled back to this box on top of the table, communion table or whatever, and took out the study guide and was just kind of leafing through it. And I was watching him. It was like he couldn't let it go. He couldn't let it down. Yeah. He had never experienced that in his life. And the change that would bring about for him, for the people he ministered to, for the leaders he led. And that's what GU is about.
Yeah.
And wherever missionaries are serving, we can find a way to work with them and help them be more effective through material that we have available.
Mark, what's your email address for anybody that wants to email you?
Sure, M. Barclift. Easy, M for Mark, and then Barclift at globaluniversity.edu.
Great. Mark, this has been excellent. Thank you.
Thank you, Neil. It's been fun.
Well, that's our podcast for today on Unsung Missionary Heroes, interviews with heroes of the faith. My name is Neil Ruda. This podcast has been brought to you by the 9 International Ministries of Assemblies of God World Missions. They are Builders International, Compassion Link, Global Initiative, Global University, Jacob's Hope, Life Publishers, Network 21-1, Oral Learners Initiative, and Royal Rangers International. You can check all of them out at im-agwm.org. Thanks again for joining us, and come back again and listen to our next podcast.